When you save on auto insurance for driving safe with USAA SafePilot, you'll feel like a big deal. Even in a traffic jam. Save up to 30% with USAA SafePilot. Restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Boys in the Band podcast. But before we get into this one, we've got a quick message from our sponsors. Now, we know that out there we've got lots of musicians, we've got lots of producers, fellow podcasters even listening into these episodes. And I'm sure there's plenty of you out there who deal with audio files on a regular basis as well. And if you do, you'll know that it's easy to get lost amongst all of the various demos and versions of a file.
Yeah, indeed. And we've been in touch with a new tech startup called Aux, who are looking for beta testers for their software. Anyone who signs up gets 10 gigabytes of free storage and the ability to easily share their files with collaborators and discover like-minded creators.
Yep. So if you've been frustrated by the clunkiness of storing and sharing music, then head to aux.app/boysintheband. That's aux.app/boysintheband. All one word. Sign up today to become a beta tester for their software and get that 10 gigabyte of free storage.
Yep, get on that. And thanks very much to Aux for supporting the Boys in the Band podcast. Speaking of which, let's get on with this week's episode.
Hello and welcome to another Boys in the Band podcast bonus episode, another episode of My Naughty's number one album. I'm Pete Smith, and as ever, Rich Gallagher is here too. How you doing, Rich?
Yeah, all good, mate. Very much enjoyed chatting to Mark Breeny from JJ72 for the main podcast at the weekend. It was good to catch up with him about his favourite album of that decade too, which we'll bring you shortly.
Yeah, absolutely enjoyed that one. And we got some nice responses on social media. Martin Shines says, love them. He used to play these songs on the guitar when he was learning to play guitar. And Claire shouting out, great live band as well. And on that note, as a live band, Mark picked out his favourite gig, wasn't it? Or one of his favourite gigs was in Manchester on Oldham Street. And well, me and Rich have been to lots of venues during that time, but we couldn't have gone to all of them. And that one left us a bit perplexed. We weren't really sure how to remind Mark of where he played that night. But fortunately, Alex McCann got in touch on Twitter and suggested it be Night and Day or Dry Bar. So we've nailed it down to, we've narrowed it down to two anyway. So anyone else can help.
Yeah. If anybody else can be sure, then we'll nail it down. But yeah, Night and Day is the one that I'd heard of. It's quite a big venue nowadays as well, I think. So perhaps it was that one. Perhaps it was Dry Bar. But we'll leave it up to the rest of you to confirm which one it might have been.
As well as chatting JJ72, we also asked Mark about his favourite album of the noughties for My Naughties number one album, and this is what he went with.
Album for me, from the noughties, from that decade, after a lot of thought, I thought about two Cribs albums in particular, you know, but I settled on Sigur Rós, their third record. It's the Bracket album, as it's known. The one with no title, it's just Brackets, and the beautiful white cover, and every track on it is untitled number one, untitled number two, and there's I chose it simply because it was only actually, I just realized when we were talking, I forgot that our second record was released in October 2002. It was released in October 2002, and at the time I was seeing this girl. I was in this relationship for a few years, actually, with this girl who was from Manhattan, and I split my time between there and touring and things. And we got that album and had it on repeat, had it on loop, and just great memories of it being a very meaningful record because of the time my life I was in. So it was. I can't necessarily wax lyrical about. And they used this chord progression and then they used this key or anything like that. It was more the time of my life that it was a welcomed respite from things. Mm. It was quite a meditative album to listen to. And it's one of those records that I listen back to it now, the odd time. It was quite tough for me to listen back to it, which again, consolidates the idea that it was a very important record. I haven't figured out exactly why yet, but it's beautiful. It's a beautiful record, and it's sung. It's gobbledygook. It's a made-up language that he sings it in, which I think is genius. you know, which might be something I need to do more of.
But yeah, I mean, you're right. It just confirms, doesn't it, that certain albums or songs at certain points in our life almost sort of just stamp themselves on that moment in time. And yeah, it's strange. Certainly doing this podcast, when you end up listening to bands that you've not listened to for a long time, you're definitely transported back to when you were really into that music and listened to that music a lot. You mentioned, the lyrics. So how important is it then, or how impressive is it that Sigur Rós on that album, but also on the follow-up with the, what's the name of the track, which was just played on basically every advert for the next 5 years.
Oh,
just
to have Hopper Holler, was it?
We're just able to have that impact almost without sort of the lyrical side of it.
I think it's important. And I, you know, going back, I don't want to sound pretentious about it, but going back to my first instrument was violin. And I played in orchestras when I was a teenager. And in a way, one of the influencing things for JD72 was I always wanted to make, you know, a cacophonous sound, something orchestral, but quite brutal as well, you know. And in a way, some lyrics, even though I wrote, like in the first album, like Snow, for example, you know, it wasn't meant to be deadly serious. It was a play on the last essay in Dubliners by James Joyce, The Dead. And there's the famous passage in it where the main protagonist talks about the snow gently falling across all the graves in Ireland. And that's where Snow came from, that idea. And what was really kind of one of the frustrating things for me was like, why can't you see, you know, when journalists were writing about it or something, it's like, I'm not serious about that. It's like, it's serious insofar as it's a representation. It's a verbal representation of an idea, a betrayal and stuff like that. And that really put me off writing lyrics, to be honest. I found from that point that anything I was trying to write lyrically, I was really self-conscious of. And I was striving for some meaning that others would definitely connect with. But what I learned then through the whole process was getting back to writing. And I still write a lot. Like I write a lot of poetry and stuff, is that to have the confidence for things to be nonsensical and to understand that they're going to be nonsensical to lots of other people. That's totally cool. And that's actually part of the magic of great music, great literature. It's the thing, the old adage of, you know, it's open to interpretation. That's what makes it powerful. Yeah. So I think that is definitely, sorry, to answer your question in a roundabout way, that's something that really appeals to me about Sigur Rós. And it's the inflections rather than the meaning of words that resonate with people. And also, without boring you about it, but like that's proven, neurological mapping shows that we react not necessarily to meanings of words, but it's the way words are said. It's a mimetic response to things. And I think that's really fascinating that's the way we're designed. And I hope that's the case, because otherwise, how can we explain away the fact that such terrible lyrics are dotted across the charts and are listened to by millions of people every day? I hope it's just about the inflection of the words and not the words.
Sigur Rós are obviously famed, particularly, you mentioned Hopper Pollard, but loads of their music, which is used in so many things like adverts, TV shows, movie soundtracks and stuff. I wonder, did JJ72 ever have features like that where you were picked up for movie soundtracks or adverts or played in EastEnders or whatever? I don't know.
I'll be honest with you, and I've no qualms in saying it now. I remember signing a publishing deal. Like there was the record labels chasing you down when you're hot, and then there's publishers who are even more intense with how they chase you down. And I remember signing a publishing deal with a major publisher, and they gave me a lot of money as a signing on, but they did nothing with our music. Yeah. And, you know, again, it's something I look back and say, even students who I talk to now or something, it's like one of the first piece of advice is, you know, you go with people who believe in what you're doing, even though the initial money, your remuneration might be a lot. If you have those people on side, you can go anywhere with them. You can do anything. So one thing I remember being annoyed about it at the time. There's some parts of JJ's music that I think would have been good for film potentially. Nope, nothing. we were actually, and Rich, are you involved with Sky Sports to some extent?
That's me.
One of the highlights, and I should have said this earlier, one of the highlights of my career was when Oxygen, the middle eighth of Oxygen, was used as the music for the best of goals at the like back in 2001 on Sky Sports. One of the reasons it was so amazing, because I love football, I'm obsessed with football, but my late grandfather, that was the only time he contacted me to go, "That's it, you're a superstar." Music's on Sky Sports, football highlights reel. I was like, boom.
Love it. Absolutely. We need a compilation album of all of the music used on those through the years, the best goals of the year. Excellent.
All good, yeah.
That was really good. Thanks for going and have a listen to, we can't even say the name of the album, can we? Just brackets.
Oh, yeah.
Brackets, exactly. And thanks for coming onto the pod. Really good.
No, cool. It was great to talk to you. Thanks a lot for the invite. Appreciate it.
There you go, Rich. Sigur Rós. Brackets. Brackets, close bracket. Yeah. How do you say it?
Even the song titles on that album, all brackets, aren't they? With very, very hard to nail down.
Do you think that was the inspiration for Ed Sheeran, perhaps?
Or just using maybe.
Yeah.
Way ahead of their time.
Definitely. I think I mentioned it to Mark, actually. Hoppepolla was really the Sigur Rós track that I'm most familiar with. I do have one of their albums, actually, but I always found it quite... I know he was saying about gibberish they were speaking in, or the made-up language. Sometimes it was Icelandic, so it wasn't all gibberish. It was an authentic language, but not that we could really distinguish between the two, I don't think. But I just found it maybe a little bit difficult to get into in terms of not having the lyrics to hook onto, but you can't deny the emotive music that they created, which obviously soundtracked a lot of adverts around that time, especially the Hoppepolla track off the album, which was absolutely the next album, wasn't it, after Brackets.
Yeah, that was off the album Tap, wasn't it? The Hoppepolla track, yeah. So, fine choice from Mark. Would have been intrigued to hear what his Cribs choices would have been as well. He teased those at the start, didn't he? But one for another day, perhaps. But one other little tease for our listeners is that we do have a new branch of the podcast coming up, Pete.
We do indeed. So, obviously, we've been speaking to lots of bands from the noughties about their memories of that time, but it feels to us like perhaps and hopefully there is a guitar scene emerging again now. Perhaps the cycle is coming round, and there's a lot of cool new indie bands that we're getting into, and we thought it'd be great to catch up with them and talk to them about the current scene and their inspirations as well, and perhaps if there are inspirations from that noughties era as well, which led them into picking up a guitar and joining a band, forming a band, and also what it's like as a musician at the moment compared to these stories we've heard from, 15, 20 years ago from artists that we grew up watching.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always really interesting to hear those bands from the noughties talking about their influences, and there's definitely a big influence, I think, from the Britpop era on that noughties boom. And I think similarly, these noughties bands would have introduced the next generation and perhaps the generation after that, certainly ones that might have been around from when they were kids or when they've heard from their parents. You know, we're talking to some young bands here, and maybe some who were just about around that scene too. So yeah, tons of exciting indie bands out there at the moment. So yeah, we're going to be bringing you this brand new branch of the Boys in the Band podcast entitled Tied to the Noughties.
Yep, so look out for it. It will drop right where you get your normal Boys in the Band podcast. So keep your eyes peeled, keep your ears peeled, and listen out for it. And we'll catch you next time.